This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
You listen to the bite-sized business breakfast best bits from Wednesday, July the 14th. A little earlier on in the show, we spoke to the vice president for the UAE region of Talabat, Jeremy Duete, who joined us to discuss the increase in the number of riders that was announced yesterday. Significant increase. We also spoke salaries this morning. Double header when it came to salaries. Hayes Gulf region, they've just released their latest research and data. We caught up with Sarah Dixon to go through those numbers, which paints a landscape of positivity when it comes to recruitment, but also salaries to be expected. And another interesting as well, from the CEO and the founder of Hala, Waleed Daniel Dib, who joined us live on the line and live on Microsoft Teams to discuss his findings. He did a bit of personal research online with founders of startups. One of the big findings was that startup salaries already challenging those salaries that could be found from corporate roles, but equally, he was expecting them to exceed them in the near future. Some interesting findings, therefore, from two surveys on all things salaries, jobs and recruitment. Plus, of course, we had Serena Kelly here in studio to bring us up to date with what we learnt from the media briefing last night and also the latest in the fight against COVID-19.
Ask Serena.
You can set your watch by us.
I think, is that a thing?
For those who have a watch still. Who's wearing a watch in the Business Breakfast studio?
Not me.
I have, mine counts my steps. Yep.
Isa ditto.
Nodding.
She's counting steps in the background as well. Does more standing and stepping than any of us sitting down here in the studio. Yeah, it's a phone thing, isn't it now?
Yeah,
the time telling.
That's the only reason why I put a watch back on. Otherwise, I haven't worn one for many, 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 many years.
There you go. Richard Dean, however, owns enough watches for all of us all together. Right, I digress. Let's have a look at last night's press briefing. But before we do that, let's look at where we are with case numbers and vaccination.
So this time last week, new figures was 1,552. New cases announced yesterday, also 1,522 new cases of COVID-19 in the country. That's after more than 263,700 tests were conducted. You also had 1,485 recoveries, 6 fatalities. Your active cases are still going up. Presently, 20,114. That's up from 20,083 the day prior.
Right. And last night's press briefing, Preed, talk to me.
Right. So Dr. Fareed Al-Hosni, the UAE health sector's official spokesperson, she was speaking. The main points that she covered were guidelines regarding Eid al-Adha celebrations, also measures that have been introduced on conducting Eid prayers safely. And she also shared some very interesting figures. So we'll start with the figures. She said that there has been a spike in COVID-19 infections and deaths after the last 3 major public holidays. So after the Eid al-Adha holidays last year, average daily cases reached 1,433, a 500% increase. After the New Year break, average daily cases rose by 200% to exceed 3,700. And then the death rate doubled to 6 following the Eid al-Fitr holidays in May, while the average daily cases exceeded 2,100, which is a 60% increase. And the reason why she was sharing the figures is obviously just to emphasize with the upcoming break and holidays and festivities, just remember to be sensible.
What counts as sensible these days, Serena?
Well, one of the main points that came out was to ensure that you are safe by testing. So doing a PCR test before visiting your relatives, especially the elderly. They've also recommended gatherings should be limited to the same family, preferably living in
Recommended or is it a rule now?
Recommended. So, yes, recommended gatherings should be limited to the same family, preferably living together in the same household and first degree relatives. It is still a requirement to wear your mask. Keep that safe physical distance as well. Avoid shaking hands and hugging. And if you're gifting money, please use electronic means because it's safer.
You're asking if your children take PayWave. Did you take Apple Pay?
Apple Pay. But yeah, it's just an emphasis on the concept that, you know, considering the figures that we've just shared and the fact that active cases are still going up, it just makes sense. It's almost like leaving it up to individuals now. It's like, please just be sensible. It's the right thing to do. And then when it comes to actually performing prayers for Eid al-Adha, the duration of the Eid al-Adha prayer itself will be limited to just 15 minutes. That's including the sermon as well. Doors will open 15 minutes prior. They will be closed as soon as prayers are done. All service facilities that are normally available, water dispensers, washrooms, they are still going to be shut. All your ablutions should be performed at home. Take your own prayer mat. That's something that's already always been ongoing anyway. They're saying no gathering, shaking hands whilst you're there, before or after the prayers. And the mosques and prayer areas on outer roads and gas stations, they will continue to be shut as well. The advice, if you're unwell, please don't attend, or if you're living with someone who's not well. And also the advice for elderly, those with chronic conditions and children under the age of 12, the advice is to pray at home as a precautionary measure.
I got a question coming in from Manal about the numbers during gatherings in Eid. Different numbers, different types of gatherings, inside, outside, restaurants. What are the rules?
So it depends on the emirate. For example, Dubai, when you're outside in a restaurant, I believe that the figure is 10. And then Shisha cafes, I believe is 6. Abu Dhabi, they've said if you're all from the same family, there's no limit, but they do have certain requirements. If you are booking at a restaurant, maybe just, ring ahead, obviously, when you're making the reservation to confirm. When it comes to gatherings at home, obviously we've said the advice is, it would be best to keep to, those living in the same household and first degree relatives. But yeah, it's generally, I think now we're at a stage where it's just, people are being left to make their own decisions and just be sensible about it. And again, that bit of guidance of like, it would be a good idea to actually test before getting together with loved ones and friends, just to make sure everybody's safe.
Right. Serena, what else do we need to know about testing and vaccines? What's happening here? What's happening abroad?
Okay. So when it comes to testing, Abu Dhabi have been ramping up their COVID-19 testing. It's in the Al-Shamka residential area. They've had mobile centres offering complimentary testing, open every day at multiple locations. And then when it comes to, you know how we were talking yesterday off the back of the WHO presser. Mm-hmm. Director General Dr. Tedros was calling for countries to help more in getting vaccines out to countries that don't have enough supplies. The UAE dispatched 500,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Tunisia. This is not the first time the UAE has sent support. Only Thursday of last week, the UAE sent 30,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Sudan. So it's dispatched many COVID-19 vaccine shipments to Sudan since February, totaling about 100 tons of aid. But since the pandemic began, the UAE has helped support more than 135 countries, supporting over 1.8 million healthcare workers against the battle of COVID-19 across the globe.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk about startup salaries, if we can. Why? Because a fascinating online report that's come out from the CEO behind Hala. Now, Hala, for those that don't know, is the UAE's first car insurance that rewards you for driving safely. Their chief executive officer is Waleed Daniel Dib, who joins us now live on the line and live on Microsoft Teams as well. Waleed, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for joining us.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're good, thanks. Like this read, it was good. I like the headline, caught my attention straight away. Let's talk about startup salaries. Who better to talk about startup salaries than your good self? Before we get on to the good, the bad and the ugly of the findings, talk to me about the sample size as well. How did you come to your conclusions?
Yeah, so to be honest with you guys, I expected to get between 50 and 100 people replying. Unfortunately, with 27 to 28 people, it's a pretty small sample size, right? So I was struggling with my findings from that in comparison to, say, a recruitment company that would typically have hundreds of thousands of data sets from all of the people who apply to them, as well as the companies they're dealing with. The same applies to venture capitalists who communicate with startups all the time. They collect a lot of data in their data rooms about what the average CEO compensation should be at this stage, what the average salary of a DevOps person, of a back-end developer should be, and what kind of ESOP should you give them, ESOP being employee stock ownership plans. And I think that that details, that kind of stuff should be shared so that we could know how much should we really compensate people, and we shouldn't really be worried about talking about salaries, you know?
So when we were talking about this, Brandy and I, a little earlier on today, we were talking about the sort of traditional model, if you like. A lot of people, I think, out there listening or watching this interview will be thinking about startups, or traditionally you'd look at startups as taking a bit of a salary cut, taking a bit of a hit, with a view that if that startup got seeding, if it went to A and B funding, then of course you could reap the benefits a little later on. Some of the suggestions you're making saying that that sort of fundamental traditional policy is changing. To that end, let's jump into some of the findings. Do you want to start with the good or the bad first?
Let's look at a couple of the bad ones, if I may. I'm looking here at, like, from the data I have. Again, keep in mind that the sample size is pretty small, but a small portion of people only have ESOP, employee stock ownership plans. So if I expect to get a salary dip because I'm leaving a corporate cushy job to go to a startup and you're paying me less, then you should at least compensate me with stocks that if we go big together. If a Kareem event happens and we, you know, exit to Uber, then I can make a few million dollars or at least a few thousand dollars. You know, 8 of the respondents said they understand how many shares they have or how their shares will vest. And only 5 of the overall people know how much their shares are relative in percent to the entire company. So that was a bit of a challenge I found. Other issues was, most of the people who responded don't have good health insurance. Look, I understand that as a startup, you don't have the same amount of money that a company with better health insurance could provide you with, but at least something that's average is the expectation. The good stuff, which I did like, I don't know if you guys can see, I'm beige, I'm not white. So there's sometimes a discrepancy in salaries based on your nationality. And the vast majority of people who answered said, look, I don't feel like people pay me differently because I'm from a certain part of the world. And another thing that I found super cool in startups that maybe doesn't exist in other parts of the, you know, incumbent institutions is the fact that 85% of the guys who responded, or the guys and girls, if I may, said that they don't think there's a gender gap in terms of startup salaries. I think that's pretty cool. That's a pretty good start. So if we talk more about that, if we know more about how much this person earns or how much that person should earn, or someone who is above you or below you in terms of the hierarchy of your office, then you know, okay, maybe I should stay in this company. Maybe I shouldn't. And that should be the incentive. It shouldn't be kind of like a slave master versus a person churning content away or building a startup with you and then just leaving without any gain.
Let's talk about transparency if we can. We talk often about transparency when it comes to wages with the big multinationals, corporates, etc. Is it imperative, important to be more transparent when it comes to startup wages, salary and compensations?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at like things like Glassdoor in the West, they show you what the average startup salary is at this role in this country. They also show you what kind of company culture to expect at this role, meaning what kind of reporting would you do? Can you work remotely? Can you do you have to bring your own laptop to work? Because obviously with startups, you want to reduce costs as much as possible. So there's a lot of transparency that goes even beyond just the salary. The transparency is, will you pay for my courses? Will you help me with my further education? Will the office look nice? I know it sounds silly because most of us work from home now, or at least a portion of us. But adding to that, working from home or COVID shouldn't be an excuse for you to abuse COVID and pay me less. You should pay fair salaries.
So if all these things, if all these boxes are ticked, and if startup founders and CEOs out there are listening on intently, are we going to get to a stage, or are we already at a stage that startup salaries can compare with corporate jobs?
That's my hope. I mean, right now I'm compensating, I'll be very frank with you, I can't pay what the IBM pays, right? And my team knows that. But I try my best to compensate with employee stock ownership plan. My team knows how much their stocks are worth. It's a big dream of mine that when we grow together. And when we exit, if we do, we all exit together and we get happy. If you look at Kitopi's recent beautiful fundraise, I think they raised $415 million. They just launched the Kitopi Academy to help train their staff. That I find admirable. I think that soon enough, you're going to have three main changes. I think startups will give more employee stock ownership plans as more funding happens, because then there's going to be competition over what little good talent we have. You're going to have startup salaries reach, match, and maybe exceed corporate salaries. And then culture will become so much more important. If you don't let me work from home, I'm not going to work for you. There's so many others who will. So I like the fact that even though I'm a founder, I'm leaning more towards the employee side and seeing, you know what, we have options. I think it's very important for employees to have options and that they work for you because they want to, not because they have no other option.
So on your report, and one phrase that really caught my imagination, I wonder if you could dig a little deeper into it. It's at the end of your piece, you talk about our responsibility as founders, and you start one paragraph with the sentence, "We must become less selfish." Explain that.
I think, I'll be honest with you, when I look at LinkedIn, it's full of platitudes about the struggles of founders. And you know, there's a lot of interviews such as this. I feel like a hypocrite because I'm being interviewed as a founder here, right? But we're so self-obsessed with our own image and the ego. And there's very little conversation about the difficulties that your colleagues go through. What about them? What about how COVID affected them? What about their salaries? I'm not going to mention any company names, but why do you hold their passports still until now in the UAE? Why do you pay them way below market standard? Why do you force employees to have these non-compete clauses, which are ridiculous, up to 2 years sometimes, which you can't anyway enforce in the UAE, which is good. But and then these CEOs go and say, "Oh, you know, we won this award because we're innovative, we're digital, we're blah, blah, blah." No, man, look at your team. These guys are extremely unhappy. You should care about them. You should focus on them. You should empower them. You should teach them, help them, listen to them. And really, it's very basic. If you want to nurture a culture from a tech ecosystem that's similar to the ones we have in the US or other parts of Western Europe, it's pretty straightforward. Take care of your team, compensate them, and grow with them. That's how innovation happens.
Waleed, lovely talking to you this morning. Really enjoyed that read as well. Really enjoyed the chat as well. You're not being hypocritical at all. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for coming on to talk to us. Waleed is the CEO of Hala. He's also written the piece entitled "Let's Talk About Startup Salaries," a post about the compensation disparity between UAE startups. It's available online. Just search for it on any of your search engines. Good to talk to Waleed.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
I continue our focus on all things salaries this morning. Thank you very much indeed for your text messages. Talat Nasir, thank you for your thoughts on our previous discussion about salaries with Waleed Daniel Dib of Hala. Thanks also to Caroline for getting in touch with us as well. Let's move the conversation on to the next of the surveys that has caught our eye and attention. And more than half of employers in the region have recovered from the negative impacts of COVID-19 on their business operations. That's according to Hays's new report, COVID-19 Business Impacts 1 Year On, which was released in the last 24 hours by the recruitment experts. Their managing director for Hays Gulf Region is Sarah Dixon, who kindly joins us live on the line and also live via Microsoft Teams. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, we're not too bad, and we appreciate your findings in this latest report, making for a good read for many employers and employees. Let's look at the sort of top lines that you have found from this latest survey. What has been the impact of workforce numbers and salaries overall since the start of the pandemic?
Sure. I mean, without a doubt, it was hugely impacted last year, I would say, across industries, across the region, and obviously the world. You know, you're looking at 43% of organizations making redundancies and even more than that reducing salaries immediately and throughout the pandemic. The good news to that is, you know, definitely since the later part of last year, coming into this year, there's been a real bounce back. There's a lot of optimism and many companies have returned to business as usual or even growth.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the numbers that jump off the page for us on this one. 52%, that's over half saying that their organisation was either in a business as usual or a growth phase of operation following the outbreak of COVID-19. Is this just an indication of the fact that companies are getting used to these new norms that we're working under at the moment?
Somewhat, but you look at any sort of economic recession over the years, and following the recession, there's always a return to growth. So it is a pattern we've seen before in different times, global financial crisis, for example. Thankfully, I guess it's come perhaps a bit quicker in this instance. And that could be because, you know, we've had no choice. There's been a catalyst to get on with things remotely, advancing technology and other things like that to perhaps return to normal a bit faster.
So what about these new working options? I mean, nobody really knew about flexible working hours and working from home pre-pandemic. Is that, again, I don't like using the phrase, but the new norm? Are these options that are being offered by employers?
It's interesting. So before the pandemic, it was around 43% of the employers we surveyed offered remote working options. And today that would be 69% of organizations. So we you know, had no choice really with the lockdown to keep business continuing, and people have found ways, and it looks like it's here to stay.
Vaccination, let's talk the V word as well. That's one that has caused a lot of chat right here on the show and amongst employers and employees. What is the vaccine effect on hiring and firing at the moment? And are companies paying more consideration to their employment moving forward?
At the time of the survey, 64% of employers said that having a vaccination made no difference in their hiring decisions. You know, there'd be certain roles, frontliners, for example, where it is a factor to take into consideration. Interestingly, the employees who took part in the survey, the majority felt that it would be reasonable for employers to expect them to be vaccinated.
A phrase that jumped off the page for me in the findings was the new era of work. Are we in a new era?
I would say so. For myself, my company, we didn't have work from home policies over the years, and now we do. And the way we work has completely changed. Interviews with teams, for example, being able to have candidates be hired, onboarded, and start working completely remotely from outside of the region. These are things that just were not done before, and it appears that employers and employees are happy to continue doing this, you know, moving forward as well.
So it certainly looks like, if we look at the data that you've supplied, that market confidence is returning, which can only be a good thing for all. But what does that mean for the rest of this year and hiring policies or hiring intentions moving forward for companies?
Sure. I'd say the companies that were most hard hit and slowest to recover from the pandemic, workforce payroll is still a huge cost that they need to keep a handle on. But for the companies that are business as usual or in growth mode, hiring is, we've seen the business activities just increase twofold, threefold over the last 6 months.
What about salaries, Sarah? I can see that the majority of people in your survey are saying, yep, my salary's come back to normal or even better. Sure. Are we seeing companies repay the difference out of the salary cuts? What's the situation on the ground?
I think a lot of salary cuts were removing bonus schemes, for example, pausing annual increments and things like that, which it sounds like new financial year companies are reinstating this. They need to retain the talent. Business for staff such as technology professionals, you're competing globally for these people, and salary is always going to be important. Employers know that, so salaries have to follow the offering.
What is Hay's outlook for salaries over the next year? What are you predicting?
Salaries, we've actually released the salary guide at the start of the year. So we will be doing another survey on salaries in September, which will give us a great outlook for 2022. In 2021, it was positive to return to pre pandemic numbers, this report indicates that's happened perhaps a bit sooner than we expected.
And are we seeing the war for talent that we're hearing about in the US? It's fed into the inflation data that came out last night, weighing in on prices in the service sector, for example. Sure. Are we seeing that happen here? Are we seeing less talent in the region and employers having to fight a little bit harder for it?
Yes and no. So I would say that employers have perhaps got a little bit more flexible or considering alternative options to get talent these days. An example would be hiring people remotely from outside of the region. I would say the travel restrictions now in and out of countries have perhaps made talent locally in the region premium, because that is definitely desirable now to hire somebody already on the ground, no issues of getting them in here. UAE nationals, KSA nationals, definitely there's a huge demand across sectors for this hiring, for example.
Sarah, really appreciate it. Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning. Thanks for joining us live on the line. Sarah's the Managing Director of Hays Gulf Region. For more information on their brand new report, COVID-19 Business Impacts 1 Year On, you can download your copy of the publication via their website, which is available on their Nah.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Yesterday, we had quite an impassioned discussion about the delivery industry. The RTA published new guidelines for delivery drivers, and Talabat announced that it was looking to double the people it had delivering stuff through its app on the roads. We are joined now by the UAE Vice President of Talabat, Jeremy Duté. Well, Jeremy, good morning.
Exciting times.
Right. Yes, they are indeed exciting and interesting. Before we dig into those RTA rules, let's speak about your own expansion plans, starting with the number of riders on the road. What are you looking to do here?
The core of our business is actually to empower people with more time. You know, we're trying to deliver always faster and always better. And this is a product and a service which is very much in demand in Dubai. So the expansion that we're seeing is actually very material. We are expecting exciting times as well ahead in the UAE with the Expo. So indeed, you know, we are planning to double down on the market.
Where are those people going to come from?
There are really two dimensions. First, you know, we expect a significant influx of visitors and consumers into the market in the next semester, with the Expo coming, attracting lots of tourists. And second, I think that there are three key levers, really. More users, more and more people actually are coming to the on-demand services. Second, increasing frequency. People are not ordering lunch or dinner anymore. They're ordering also breakfast, coffee. And expansion in services. Not only people are ordering food, but they also start to order from our supermarket called T-Mart. They start to order pharmacy products, flowers, gifts or sweets on the platform.
Okay, well, let's look at the drivers themselves. As I understand it, you don't employ them directly yourselves. You use third-party suppliers. What does that mean for the control that you have over how they work and their conditions?
Yeah, I think the document published by the RTA is a very welcome document, which is going to provide a platform for aggregators like us to accelerate the transformation of the industry. One of the dimensions actually in the document is actually that we need to put all the riders on the company visas. And this is really great because this would create a lot of visibility and stability in the market. This is a very, very important dimension of the document.
What does that mean for you, though? You are third party, aren't you? As in there's someone else who actually employs and runs them.
What it means for us is that we will have to work hand in hand with our third-party logistic providers, and there are 45 of them also in the UAE, and this number is growing. And we're going to invest quite a lot in technology to provide them with the digital infrastructure to collect the data, manage the data, and be able to keep track of, you know, this very significant number of people that they are going to employ on our behalf.
Are the drivers who work ultimately for you incentivized by the number of deliveries they make? Do they get more money for the more deliveries that they fit in a day?
The compensation structure actually has many, 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 many elements to it. I mean, there is time, there is distance it drives, there is number of deliveries they make per day. There is bonus and tips, and we provide also bonus for them to work, for instance, during weekends or during special times of the year, such as Eid.
But if it is on time and deliveries as well, and safety was one of the big things that's come out of this RTA manual, how do you make sure that drivers aren't speeding, aren't driving dangerously in order to hit those numbers to get more money?
This is a great question. And I mean, clearly safety is a very, very key topic and a very key concern of ours. And so I don't think that there is a silver bullet. The way we think about it at Talabat is that we have many lead bullets. So it's a multi-faceted solution. The first one is training, of course. So we're investing a lot in training. We're investing in training also with the RTA. And very soon, all the riders will have to secure a security permit with the RTA in order to be able to get on the bike. We have invested ourselves into training facilities and into training teams to make sure that the riders are aware of the regulation and the necessary precautions. Second, we're investing a lot into the equipment, more padded equipment, security shoes, certified helmets. Third, we have invested actually in our own security team that we call the Talabat Patrol, which is working hand in hand with the police across, you know, the UAE, in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but also in all the other Emirates, and with the RTA, to actually create some sort of, you know, regulation and overview, oversight of Talabat over those riders. You can see them on the road, actually. They have a blue uniform. They call the Talabat Patrol. Last but not least, if ever something happens, where to happen, we actually have introduced, and we're one of the first companies to do that, health insurance, and health insurance for all the riders, whereby if anything happens, the Talabat Patrol will come on site, will take charge of the rider, will take them to the hospital, and the riders will not have to disperse any money, of course, to take care.
Is not health insurance mandatory for employees, yeah, either by your third party, if they're the direct employer, or yourselves?
It wasn't. It's an initiative that actually we took. I'm hoping that, you know, in the new document, on the forthcoming discussions that will happen with the RTA, it will become. It seems really essential. So as soon as, you know, our fleet started to grow at the beginning of the year, we actually decided actually to move right away with this with this insurance, because initially Talabat didn't have delivery riders. The restaurants were delivering themselves, and the number of riders at Talabat actually has been multiplied by 5 since the beginning of the year. And so we quickly realized that this was becoming a very important topic.
I understand that with your expansion, you're also looking to cut delivery times down to 15 minutes where you can. How do you make sure, again, that this doesn't encourage speeding, reckless driving, and stressed riders in order to hit those targets?
This is a great topic, and I think, you know, the delivery, actually, we don't save time. We do not manage to save time, and we don't want to save time, really, on the delivery itself. When you actually think of when you order food, the delivery time and the time spent on the road by the food is actually very little. Most of the time, actually, that you wait for, actually, the food is being prepared. Then there's a lot of time, actually, that is invested on the coordination between the restaurant, the rider, and Talabat to pick up the food. So we want to work with the partners on, you know, maybe getting the food pre-done, pre-cooked, pre-made, just on time for our customers. For instance, you know, we sell thousands and thousands of chicken shawarmas every day. We know basically when a chicken shawarma is going to be ordered every day at any point in time on the platform. We could actually provide that information, that visibility to the restaurant. The second topic is actually, as our number of consumers are growing, we are starting actually to locate our restaurants through dark stores, through dark kitchens, closer to you. So actually the delivery distance will reduce, and we are very much hoping that the risk to our riders will actually reduce as well.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately, out of time. Speaking to the UAE Vice President, Jeremy Duté of Talabat, thank you very much for your time this morning. On the back of the RTA's publication of guidelines for delivery drivers, Talabat has said that it is looking to double the number of riders that it uses on the roads, albeit through third-party companies, as Jeremy was explaining there, and also reduce the time to deliver.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.